Welcome to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Chris Crepetta from Merlin Publishers. We're going to be discussing the different routes to publishing. So firstly, who are Merlin? What do you do?
We publish books, of course. We've been around for quite some time. Obviously, business model has changed over the years, but nowadays we focus on publishing across the age spectrum. So we have traditionally done a lot of children's books, everything from the preschool stuff all the way up to the young adults. And over the past 6 to 8 years, we have had an imprint for adult books, by which I mean non-children's, not the other kind of adults necessarily, because sometimes they overlap. So slowly, it's a small imprint, but slowly but surely we've been gathering quite a few, you know, the top names in local publishing, and it's an imprint I'm very proud of.
And are books becoming more and more popular in Malta, as the global trend suggests that printed books are making a comeback?
Yes. Well, in Malta, because as you know, in most things, the things are a bit, trends come in a bit later, maybe a few years later, kind of we've almost, to a certain extent, missed the dip, if you know what I mean.
Fantastic.
Because by the time it got here, which doesn't mean there aren't different sets of challenges, of course, but although we, as Maltese publishers, as people involved in book trade, tend to complain and say, for a number of reasons, that people don't read as much on public transport, you don't see people reading as much in waiting rooms, you don't see people reading as much, which is all true. But when you look at the figures, kind of the cold figures, be it of local publishing, be it of imports of English language fiction and other books from the UK especially, you realize that, you know, we punch above our weight, you know, considering the size of the country, the number of people who live here and people who read.
Do we sell a lot of books to tourists while they're here, or is that something we don't have a...
I wouldn't know firsthand, because I don't work directly in that area. But, again, judging by the figures and by the numbers, I would probably think so. I mean, most people, I mean, when I go on holiday, I carry books with me, but I'm sure many people don't. So many people would be here, especially if it's a leisurely holiday, beach holiday. You're here and, you know, just buy something to read while you're here, I guess.
So locally, as a publisher, what do you do on a daily basis? You receive manuscripts, you...
Yes, we basically take the book from its initial stages, it's the rough manuscript, all the way to publication and marketing. So basically, we start off with a manuscript, which we've received, sometimes they're commissioned, then goes through the editing stage, which can take a while, depending on the work. Then it goes into the pre-publishing stage, so the production stage, the design, the graphic design, the layout, proofreading, illustrations, if it's a children's book, or photography, but depending on the nature of the book, of course. Then it obviously eventually goes to printing, the physical printing press, and obviously also marketing, which is crucial and becomes obviously more crucial the more time passes.
And so do you local authors for the local market, or do you have international authors and you publish, or are you looking also for local authors to publish internationally?
Primarily, I can only speak obviously about us, about Merlin here. We concentrate on the local market primarily and largely, because for various reasons, one of which being for practical reasons, the setup, the infrastructure, if you're going to credibly market something abroad, not as a kind of flash in the pan thing, but credibly, you need a setup, an infrastructure, physical warehouses, marketing team on the ground, because many of us think that with digital and with online, you can just, you know, work out of your basement online, and you can, yes, of course you can do that, but if you want, that's why I said credibly, if you want a biggish setup, a credible setup, then you need, you know, teams on the ground to do that. So unless you've got that, I tend to focus on the local market. Of course, that doesn't exclude the occasional export, the occasional, especially with international prize winning books, like we've had Pierre Meilhazio Prize for Literature winning book, which rights to which have been sold to 8 countries and counting, but obviously those are exceptions because of, obviously in this case, they're backed by a big international prize.
And there are a couple of other local books that I've read recently that it hurts me almost that they're only in Maltese, and they're such good books that you wish that they would be in English and be able to be exported more readily.
Unfortunately, yes. In fact, sometimes I do say to some authors, "Hey, what a pity for you that you were born Maltese," if you know what I mean. I don't mean that in the bad way.
No,
obviously.
I understand.
There are routes to international marketing. However, in the wider and the international scene, that would not be the publisher's remit. That would be the agent's remit,
okay.
Which kind of brings us to a lacuna there is locally. There is no literary agents. So publishers tend to kind of wear the part-time hat of agents. But obviously, it's not our full-time job, so we can't dedicate the resources of financial, but also especially time resources to it. And as anything else, you just don't turn up in the UK, in Italy, wherever, and say, "Hey, I've got my books," and people are going to queue. It takes a lot of legwork and spending times in meetings and pitching, so obviously it requires a dedicated team for that.
And is that something that you mentioned about rights, selling the rights? Is that the way that
yes.
would happen normally?
Yes, very rarely you'd physically sell the book, so you'd have a foreign bookshop wanting copies of a book. Obviously it would have to be written in English, not Maltese, mm-hmm. Or another world language. But more often than not, it's the rights which are sold. So, for example, an agent, it's usually an agent or an editor rather than the publisher direct, who would say, "I would like to publish this book in Italian, in Italy." So they would bid for the Italian rights. And obviously what you sell are the rights, and then they take care of everything. They translate it, they do, you know, the whole process all over again, so design, printing, marketing in their country.
That language, because obviously everything
yes.
appeals differently,
exactly,
it's not just
exactly.
a direct translation.
No, absolutely.
So authors, do they literally just send you their work? How should an author send work to a publisher? Is there a rule?
Not a rule, except the only rule I would what I'd recommend is always look out for the submission guidelines of the publisher you've selected. So, outside Malta, many publishers have a policy of not accepting unsolicited manuscripts. So you need to go through an agent. Here in Malta, luckily for authors, well, luckily for us as well, it increases the workload, but it also avoids that kind of first gatekeeper, which means sometimes you might not get a manuscript which is particularly fresh because you're at the mercy of the agent thinking, no, it doesn't fit the trends of 2016. So it can work both ways. So locally, practically all publishers accept manuscripts. They would usually have submissions guidelines. It's usually on their website, or you can ask for it. It's usually small things. One publisher might want to read the entire manuscript. More often than not, they want to read a few chapters. So, for example, we usually ask in the pitch for a synopsis, two sample chapters, and a short, very brief couple of paragraphs on what makes, kind of pitching your own manuscript, what makes it special, why do you think it should be published, what makes it stand out from any other thriller there is around, or whatever your chosen genre is.
And does that work the same with children's books? Because they don't necessarily have chapters. It might, if it's
yes.
not a fiction.
No, in fact, we usually say it's two chapters or the equivalent.
Okay.
And we do get inquiries and emails in that respect. So, for example, if it's a picture book with just a few words, then they usually send an entire text. If it's a chapter novel, then you might want a few more than two. It depends. Really, the idea behind it, to be honest, is because no publisher has the time to read through the entire manuscript in each and every manuscript they receive. So they read the first few chapters or a couple of chapters.
To get the good feeling of the book.
Exactly. There are some things you can tell immediately. If, say, someone's writing in Maltese or in English and doesn't have a command of the language, you pick that up immediately. So it's pretty useless sending an entire manuscript if you can tell that this person needs to actually go back and, learn their grammar first.
Rewrite from the start. So what do you do when a manuscript lands on your desk? What's the physical process? What actually happens?
You mean before I've actually selected it?
Yes, yes. So if it literally...
Yes, I've received a submission.
Arrives through the postbox?
Yes. Well,
email.
Yes.
Sorry, so old-fashioned.
Well, you know, sometimes we did... last year we published a manuscript, but actually it came from... It was a very rare occurrence from the UK, from an author who had no current connection to Malta other than the fact that she'd lived here in the 50s. And it did come into the old-fashioned, you know, mail, open the envelope. It was part of the charm, I'll be honest. But yes, it is an exception. Now, what I do is, I'll be honest, for better or for worse, I trust a lot of my instinct. Of course, I have to be careful not to let my personal tastes influence. And I like giving the example of horror. I can't stand horror as a genre. I don't read horror much, and I don't like it. Mm-hmm. But obviously, if I receive a manuscript, I need to think of, will this sell? Will it be popular? Try to put myself, you know,
in the
audience. And usually what I do in that case is get an external reader, someone, because I don't feel competent to judge a manuscript, a horror novel, for example. So what I do is, yes, base myself on a mix of instinct, whether I like it, how much I like it, how unusual it is, how the market will react to it, I think. But also that kind of, it's unquantifiable, that kind of, how does it stand out? Does it make you want to stop whatever you're doing, even if you've got a day full of meetings and emails, and just go on reading? And the reason I do it, apart from the fact that obviously it's fun to read something exciting, because I say, if it's something that made me want to stop and read, hopefully to have the same effect on readers.
So how many manuscripts do you receive a year or a week? How do you quantify how many come through?
To be honest, I've never actually, you know, sat down to count it. But there's, if I put an average, there's always more than one per week, which...
Okay. It's quite something.
It's quite a lot for the market. Obviously, some of them you can discard almost immediately if you start reading. Others are more problematic. Through my experience, the most problematic ones are the ones which you like, which are great, but which you're afraid might not have a market, because that's where the dilemma, the difficulty comes in.
It has to be commercially viable.
Exactly. Sometimes it's a great novel, but there's been so many other novels published recently in the same vein, or else, you know, there's many, those are the more problematic, where we really try and save the manuscripts, because we don't want to lose it.
And so really, in that sense, the advice to the writer is, once you've written, don't procrastinate, do send it in, so that you don't become another story that's the same as.
Exactly. I mean, just as anything else, better be a bit ahead of the curve than when everyone, you know, been writing about that.
I'm just wondering as well, because most of the books you publish are in Maltese. I'm guessing about 90%, something along those lines. So there's no agent route to go through. But what happens if somebody who writes in English wants to come and have their book published in Malta and then go further? Once you've published in Malta, can you have an agent overseas or something to take your book further?
Yes, you do. It's obviously, as anything, it depends on contracts. And, you know, so I would advise authors always, it should be obvious, but obviously always, you know, check contracts and make sure it takes you where you want, I mean, where you want to go with it. So obviously, I'm a publisher, so obviously I'd be looking out for my interests. Uh-huh. And there are some requirements that are imposed by the publisher for obvious reasons. I mean, if I'm publishing a manuscript here in Malta, then obviously I have to insert in the contract that author can't give sell that same manuscript to someone else in Malta, obviously. Mm-hmm. When it's an English language manuscript, again, and it differs depending by contract, but you'll find that in most cases the contract, as should reasonably be expected, limits the exclusivity to Malta.
And do you sometimes read a book that comes in Maltese and just think, no, this is too big, this has to be, you know, a much bigger sell, we can do this in English and sell it out?
No, because of two reasons. First of all, because although I'm very much in favor of translation, I'm very wary of a manuscript that has been conceived in a language and is not so much translated when you acquire the rights, because then there's a different theme, but as in the author changing the language to suit publication requirements, because many times it feels a bit forced.
I see.
But also, ironically, this is again just my experience, books in English written locally I find suffer a bit, which ironic compared to written in Maltese.
Is that because I find Maltese people's English very formal and quite heavy to read somehow.
Could,
even the newspapers,
yes.
I find quite turgid, yes. And quite heavy. So is that that's something as well? The English is almost too proper.
Yes, it could be. It could be. That coupled with maybe a bit of a kind of post-colonial hang-up about if I'm going to read a novel in English, then I'll buy one written by a native English writer.
I see. Okay.
But I think it's a mix of reasons, really. But I don't think, you know, if anyone's ever studied it in detail, but it's undeniable.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to What's the Story with me, Monique Chambers, and my guest this week is Chris Gruppetta of Merling Publishers. You mentioned earlier about commissioning books. How does that happen?
It happens very often on the educational side of things, because obviously we would have noticed a gap in the market, or schools or other customers would have pointed out a gap in the market, so we'd commission something. However, it also happens in some non-fiction, so say we might, you know, it happens when the idea is generated internally from the office. So, you know, we might think, oh, let's have a book about the history of radio in Malta to keep it
topical.
So then we'd say, okay, and that's how we'd commission. We'd say, okay, let's think of an author, I'm going to do it in Maltese or in English, an author who would be versed in the subject, can write about it. That can happen. It can happen with children's books. Again, usually we notice a gap in the market. I find it tricky whenever you get closer to creative writing. If it's non-fiction, if it's educational, academic, then it's okay. I mean, okay, as in you need someone who's really well-versed, but can be done. When it's creative, I find that it can rarely happen because, as you know, creativity has to be inspired, can be forced upon. I find that when commissioned pieces can sometimes be weaker, if I ask you to write a creative piece, you know, I'd like you to write a creative piece on a chair that flies. It's my idea, but it's not actually your idea, not necessarily something you'd be excited by. So,
and not be able to get into the same level of detail as you've
exactly.
imagined. But what about, you have obviously some serial authors out there, do they have the sort of pressure upon them to deliver a book every year or every 2 years, or is that something that's down to each an individual contract?
It is down to each individual, obviously. There's less of that pressure on the author because most, practically all authors in Malta don't do that for a living. I understand that would be the case if an author, you know, depends on royalties and on fees from visits, from talks related to his or her writing for a living, then obviously they would have the pressure to do that. Obviously, we do put some pressure, how should I put it, with some books or authors who are, you know, very popular, who kind of, we know their fans, their readers are expecting a new book from. But as we were saying earlier, with creativity, you can't really force
it.
So
it,
you can try and help it along, but
that's as far as it goes. Yeah. And what about, you often see, you know, second edition, third edition. Why does that happen?
Okay, there's basically a distinction between editions and reprints.
Mm-hmm.
So a reprint is when stock ran out and you've literally reprinted it. So printed it again, so you had 500 copies, 1,000 copies, they ran out. You think there's a demand, because it's not necessarily the case. You might say, okay, we'll stop here, because there's the demand for another 1,000. But you might decide that there is, so you just reprint it. An edition, they are used interchangeably and incorrectly very often. So you do hear third edition, 10th edition, whatever, when they're referring to a reprint. An edition usually indicates some significant change, either in content or in photography or in, for example, a few years ago in 2008, there were some of the spelling rules in Maltese changed. So obviously books had to be reprinted with changes, so that would be a new edition, because obviously spelling has changed. Or a historical book would be updated in a new edition to include, was published in 2010, it's History of Malta, and you're publishing it now again, so we want to update 2010, 2016. That's
and
the
so
new edition.
Some new facts have come to light or whatever, and
exactly.
they've had to be included. Okay. So you mentioned earlier that there aren't actually book agents in Malta, but why would somebody use a book agent if they could?
Yeah, because an agent is, on the one hand, he or she is a gatekeeper, because publishers, where they're in countries where there are agents, publishers receive manuscripts that are recommended, that are flagged by the agent. From the author's point of view, an agent is a manager, so to speak, just
okay.
like a singer, an actor would have an agent who's a manager. So basically, their payment would be a percentage on the royalties, so it would be 10, 15, 20% on the royalties,
mm-hmm.
in exchange of which they take they'd pitch the manuscripts to various publishers, they take care of the legal stuff and negotiate the contract and get, if there's publicity interviews, media related stuff to be done, they'd work on those in conjunction with the publisher. They basically let the author concentrate on the creative,
being a writer.
And whereas in Malta we don't have that, and authors rightly complain that they end up sometimes having to do a lot of the
sort of PR.
Yes, PR, and there's the publisher that mm-hmm. that as well, but and also pitching manuscripts and doing these things which an agent would do in another country.
But when it comes to doing things like the cover design, editing, is that something that still the publisher would do even if you have an agent?
Yes. That is usually, in most contracts, the publisher's remit. Obviously, the agent would be able to advise the author in the sense that is one of the areas. You've mentioned an area where there is relatively, not much, but there can be a bit of friction between the publisher and the author, because obviously every author has their idea about how the cover should look, what marketing campaign to have, and I'd love billboards and I'd love this and fireworks, but on the other hand, the publisher would know a bit more what will work in the market, that this cover, while it might appeal to the author personally, will not work because it might feel dated, or it would give a vibe of being the wrong kind of novel. Whereas an agent can act as an intermediary in those cases, because an agent has the is acting on behalf of the author, so has the author's interest at heart, but would usually be a professional in the industry, so would know just as well as the publisher what the trends are, what is being done, so can kind of act as an intermediary.
So what's stopping somebody or, agents being in Malta? Is there something that's stopping them, or is it just something that hasn't happened yet?
I'd love for it to happen, as would many authors, I'm sure. It's probably financial, because royalties are worked out, it varies between publishers, but it's usually a percentage based, very mm-hmm. similar to what happens abroad, overseas. However, obviously, print runs are much smaller, retail prices can be much less in some cases, so obviously in pounds, shillings and pence, it's going to be a lesser amount. So if you take 15-20% whatever out of that, it's going to be peanuts, and an agent would really need to have a lot of authors to make a living out of that.
But if it was something they could do almost for fun, skill set would they have to have? There's obviously some legal aspect of being able to negotiate contracts.
Negotiating and the knowledge of the book trade, really. One of the mistakes that authors make is pitching the manuscript to the wrong publisher. And if I could, give one piece of advice, to me, don't do that, because it reflects badly. If someone is specialized in children's books, don't go with a non-fiction specialized, research.
Story, yeah,
exactly. if a publisher specializes in academic stuff, don't go with a novel, or vice versa. So an agent would be able to navigate these things, and obviously would need, although can acquire them by time, would need to, be well-read to recognize in the first place what a good book is.
Okay. And another important person in the process is an editor. What do editors do? How does a publisher choose an editor?
Yeah.
What kind of job is that?
Yes, fair question. In Malta, again, had you asked me this question 5-6 years ago, I'd probably have answered quite similarly to the agent situation, in that obviously we're not talking newspaper editors, we're not talking magazine editors. It's a different kind of editor, and books were, it sounds strange to say, but were rarely edited.
Okay.
Fiction especially, yes, in Malta, which is quite I won't go into all the details, but it's one of the factors why perhaps some novels which we read locally and say this book has potential, but that but is usually the lack of an editor. Over the past few years, things have changed. It is still, unfortunately, not a standard thing. You don't assume that a book will have been edited. However, it is. I mean, I personally try and make sure that practically all of our books have an editor stage. Mm-hmm. It is. I would argue that it is a plus to authors because obviously it's a huge help. It's an extra pair of eyes, really. So an editor is someone. An editor is not a proofreader. An editor is not someone there, you know, to check your spelling, to check your grammar. They do as well, but they check the flow of a novel. Sometimes it's just even giving the author the luxury of an editor to discuss with, to say, okay, so this chapter is a bit slow, the pace is kind of, we're killing the pace here, what can we do, how can, and obviously they do the factual editing, obviously, as well.
Making sure the right person is where they could
exactly
be at the right time.
Where they could be.
And didn't start driving a Jaguar and arrive in a Ford or
exactly,
something.
Or change clothes midway, or, you know,
in the Jaguar.
In the Jaguar, exactly, which could be a subplot in itself.
But no, so editing is quite an important job, and there are a number of editors locally that do work.
Yes, again, because it's a new field, many of them have, there's no formal training yet. There is a course, a diploma that's starting here at the University of Malta next mm-hmm. year, which will include, it's not purely on editing, but will include modules on literary editing. So many editors, we try and train them through practice, really. You kind of mentor by, you know, starting off with manuscripts. But there's a kind of generation of authors that's of editors, sorry, that's coming.
And do you have you can, when you read a manuscript, you can sort of picture the editor that would work well with that story, or an editor just comes there, the next one, they get the next one.
No, absolutely not. It needs to. I mean, I do. I edit some of our key, not all obviously of our key authors, but obviously time is limited. Plus, it needs to match. You know, some. I wouldn't go near. You know, so we need to match the temperament of the writing. You know, there's also sometimes negotiation skills come in as well. If you, yeah, some authors are open to
feedback.
Feedback, thank you. Others less so. So you need to find the author who will be blunt or diplomatic, as the case might be. I think I've said enough on that subject.
We'll call this episode to a close. We will be speaking to Chris Grappetta from Merlin Publishers again, talking about other routes to market. But thank you for this week. That's Chris Grappetta from Merlin Publishers and me, Monique Chambers, on What's the Story?